Have you got any war stories? Don't tell me now if you have, but have you got some?
Oh, yeah. I have one particular war story about reading that I cannot wait. I love that you call it a war story, too, because it does feel so dire in the moment, right?
It damaged me going through the experience of... Do you know when you're just put on the spot and you're just like, oh, I can't. It's grim, isn't it? It's grim.
That's so grim. Because you're expected to know how to do this skill.
They think you can do it.
They think you can do it. And you've led them to believe that you can.
It's a thing, isn't it? Anyway, guys, so the title of this podcast is Do You Have to Read Music? War Stories from the Road. Yes. So I think everybody can imagine that there's going to be some war stories and some hacks as well. Like, I have learned some cool little, you know, tips and tricks. I'm not sure about you, about how to, you know, just get through to a certain extent, but man, yeah.
I've got a few things too, and I mean, it, you know, we should probably distinguish between reading notation and reading charts and all, you know, those things as well. But yeah, there are a few things that I've really found that are really helpful, but I learned the hard way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, actually, when you were saying, like, what do we mean by reading notation or reading charts? Let's define what that is. You go for it.
I think when I hear the word reading, how is your reading? I always associate it with standard notation, right? Dots and dashes and the lines on the staff paper, right? Bass clef, treble clef. The standard of reading to me feels like that. And the type of reading that I do more is chart reading, where someone writes a chart. Maybe it's, they're writing letters, chord symbols, or they're even using the Nashville numbers, which is a different style of charting. That I feel good, better about that system. I use that system a lot. In fact, I just did a bunch of charts for a session that I'm flying out for this afternoon. And, you know, that kind of reading, I think, is really, really beneficial to people playing pop music, rock music, jazz music, even playing in church, playing in wedding bands. But that standard notation thing, you get asked to do a film score or you do some kind of pit work, right? Which I know you've done, Scott, shows. Yeah. If you're in a studio and someone has a real specific line they want you to play and they wrote it out in standard notation, that is what I think of as reading.
Reading, right? Absolutely. Yes, there's sort of like two types of reading, isn't there? There's reading charts and there's reading notation. So let's talk about them. Let's break them up into two different things. And let's keep it super simple, right? Like, do you feel like you have to read? Do you feel like you have to read charts? Let me give you some context. To be a bass player or musician who is going to be able to function somewhat as a pro or semi-pro player and be kind of like, even if you're a hobbyist, be efficient in the practice time when you're jamming with friends, be efficient with the time that you've got. Do you feel like you kind of have to be able to read charts and are at a serious disadvantage if you don't?
Yes, 100% yes.
Talk about loaded question.
I know. Yeah. Like, no. No. Yeah. Yes, I do, Scott. well, Scott. No, for sure. I mean, and in the very beginning, I was, you know, playing in a rock band. And then when I moved to more sort of side musician territory, I remember playing with a band and they would hand out charts, you know, and I was really crap at reading them down and taking, and not standard notation, but just reading chord symbols and then taking the DSL coda or following the roadmap of the chart. Actually, and dude, I need to say, you did a lesson on this way back on YouTube where you talked about scanning. It was maybe when you did the sight reading stuff with those different players, Sheree, John Button. I remember watching that video and hearing those guys and you talk about, like, look for the things that are going to trip you up first. So look for ledger lines or look for tricky chord symbols or look for that repeat sign that takes you somewhere. And I thought, duh, obvious. Like, why haven't I thought about that? Like, I was well into, you know, into my career as a bass player. And I thought, oh, because I would just look at the top of the chart and go, well, oh God, here we go.
Jump off over the cliff.
In. But yeah, I mean, I have had now enough gigs where I had to write charts, you know, okay, we're preparing for 40 brand new tunes, right? And so, all right, I need to write out some charts for myself. Or I've been in a studio situation, where, the songwriter is going to play the song on an acoustic guitar and then everyone is going to write a chart, maybe even without their instrument in hand. What, you know, you're hearing the chords and you can kind of have a pitch reference and decipher what they're playing and you write it down. I mean, and that is crazy. That's crazy level. But I got there just as a progression because I needed to. I was in environments. I worked in a studio a long time with Corey Wong, where Corey was session leader and I was the bass player. But then when he got super duper world famous and left, I became session leader for a while. And so I had to take over that skill of sitting there and listening to the songwriter play a tune and me deciphering the chords, writing the chart for everyone. And that was pressure, but I got good at it. And so sorry, the long-winded answer is, of course, yes, I think reading and writing even charts is really, really helpful. Is it critical? Will it tank you? I mean, of course, there are bass players that are playing in famous bands that probably don't read charts or write charts. But to be a working musician, to play with a wide variety of artists, styles of music in a town, you should read and write charts.
It's just so important, isn't it?
I think so.
It's so important. And also because it's kind of sort of like the standard, isn't it? Like even it's the, like pretty much everybody, every pro, every semi-pro muso is going to be writing charts, going to be able to write down the chords and understand sort of like the general, I guess, sort of like layout of the song, what it looks like, you know, where the choruses are, where the all of that kind of stuff. And then also it just makes you so much faster and efficient. Like, can you remember, like, when you were a kid and you were, you know, like going around your friends and you were all jamming and stuff and there wasn't a chart in sight and you used to have to practice a song like 10 times over every single week. Every single week you practice that same song and you still get it wrong. So, yeah, and, like, if somebody's been like, hey, you should write some charts out just to begin with, and, you know, so there is just sort of, like, you know, there's so many uses, but I think the, you've got to be able to write, read and write charts, and I think that when I say read, I mean, as Ian was saying here, read chord symbols. I understand what the chord symbols are. Understand that that's, like, a C major chord symbol. Understand that this is a D minor chord symbol, and then the next one's a G7 chord symbol. Then we've got A minor chord symbol, and understand what that translates to on your instrument and be able to do it as you're playing. So is the drummer counts it off, 2, 3, 4, the band's in, you need to be able to look at the chart and play along in real time and follow the chords. That's what we're talking about here. Well, in terms of reading charts, you know, you got to be able to look at the chords and play along in real time. And when we get into the war stories from the road section, I will share some stories of not being able to do that. And, you know, and just, you know, I didn't have any kind of like peers that were like, oh, by the way, dude, you need to be able to work on yourself. This is huge. You need to be able to do this. Otherwise, you're going to get yourself some in seriously hot water. So, so yeah, you got to be able to read and write charts because it's just going to, it's kind of just, it's an unwritten rule. What and about,
I just want to add to this too. I want to add that, if you're listening to this and you, and it feels like an indictment, this is no, like, it's no indictment. I mean, everybody starts not knowing how to do this. And so, you know, and something, Scott, that I know that you're like super bullish about is getting a handle on arpeggios, getting a handle on chord tones. And if you think, oh, but that's for walking and I don't know how much jazz I'm going to play, it doesn't matter. Getting a handle on what, when you see C, that means C, E, G, it means a triad. Or when you see C7, well, what does that seven mean? Well, it means that you actually use a flat seven. That's a diad, or no, that's a dominant chord. That's yeah. crazy, right? And so, and in the beginning for me, I didn't know that stuff and I kind of just pieced it together over time. But shameless plug, I mean, because we've been on all these like new member huddles on Mondays.
Oh yeah.
I think that like there are so many great resources on SBL. So if you're part of SBL, you maybe already checked it out, or if you haven't, you absolutely should. What's the course that we've been talking about a lot in that?
The harmonic layering course.
Oh, the harmonic layering course. Yes.
There's two. There's a harmonic layering course, which is my breakdown of it. It's a massive course. It's like seven or 8 hours or something. But it's all like how to visualize arpeggios and triads and how to visualize these chords on the fingerboard and be able to memorize them. And then also the bass foundations course as well, where I go into and just for context, the way I like to sell this to bass players of here's why you should learn your arpeggios is that an arpeggio, because what, just let me back up. When I was a kid and I was learning guitar, I was learning classical guitar when I was 13 or 14 and my teacher was making me do these arpeggios. And I was like, what am I even doing this for? This is like, whatever, this is dude. Crazy. Like, what am I doing this for? This isn't playing music, right? So, and many of you might be in that situation as well on other instruments in the past, whether you learned it on piano or guitar, whatever, right? You're learning your arpeggios. Check this out, right? So guitar players, what do they do predominantly all of the time? They play chords in some. Piano players and keys players, what do? They play chords in songs. What do bass players do? Okay, so some people think, the bass player, they just play sort of like what the guitar's doing, like an octave down, right? Or some people might think, well, they just play the root note of the chord. And yes, sometimes we do, right?
Right.
But what we actually do is that we outline the chords. Using our bass, we support the chord by playing root notes. We can also play the other notes within the chord and we outline the chord. So effectively, bass players, we do the same thing with the guitar players and the keys players, right? They play the chords, we play the chords. The only difference being is that we play the chord at one note at a time. You know, we can play root 3 or root 5 or root 7 and a combination of any of those. And what we're doing there is outlining the chords. How do we do that? What's the tool that we use to outline the chords? We use arpeggios, because all an arpeggio is a chord played one note at a time. This is my key line that I love saying. I love it.
Yeah.
A bass player that doesn't know their arpeggios and how to use them is like a guitar player or a piano player or a keys player that can't play chords.
It's true, right?
Yeah, it's like that's true. So like I really like to really hammer people with this idea of you've got to be, if you want to be any kind of like, you know, bass player, you've got to be able to play the chords, you've got to be able to play your arpeggios, because that is how, you know, what we need to be functioning as within the band.
And when people talk about writing bass lines, when I get questions about, hey, how do you write a bass line? The first thing I say is, do you have a handle on triads or chord tones or arpeggios? Do you have a handle on basic diatonic 1-3-5 through a scale sequence, you know, playing the one chord, the two chord, the three chord? Does that make sense? And if they say nope, I say that is a bass line, you know, like playing triads. When you play a triad, you're like, oh, this is the bass line for every ska song in the 90s. And you play a triad, oh, this is the bass line for all walking blues. Oh, this is the bass line for, you know, like starting out how to walk a jazz bass line. And then it just goes into everything. Motown music, rock and roll. I mean, everything. So the chord tone thing is a big, big deal. And and I was going to say, too, I mean, I remember when I started to teach, talking about the chord tone thing. College. So I got hired as the bass teacher at this college in Minneapolis. I was in my mid-20s and I was a good bass player. And I knew all my modes and I knew all my arpeggios, but I thought that jazz was some secret language, right? And so I remember buying Ed Friedland's Walking Book, and the first thing that he leads off with is chromatic approach, which is not talking about chord tones. It's talking about, you know, using half-step chromatic approaches to the root note, to the fifth. And I thought, oh, and it didn't honestly sound that good to me, but I thought, well, it's in the book. Ed Friedland is a pro. This is what I got to teach. And I'll never forget, that's how I started to teach walking bass, is all of these odd chromatic approaches to the root and the fifth. And I will never forget, man, the jazz piano teacher of the college came to me and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, what do you mean? He said, "What are you showing all these students?" He's like, "All these bass players show up to my class." It's Pete Shue. Oh, Pete Shue is the best. He's like, "All these bass players are showing up to my class and they're playing this nonsense. They're playing all this chromatic nonsense." I said, but that's kind of jazz, man, right? I mean, that's like how you, right? And he said, he just looked at me. He sort of put his face close to mine and he said, "Dude, chord tones." I said, "Oh, yeah," but he said, no. Maybe a chromatic movement on beat four, but bro, he was like, "Chord tones, please." He's like, "Teach them this. Teach them the root, the third, and the fifth, and then a passing note. But they have to play chord tones or it sounds like trash."
What do you think you'd done taking? Because obviously, like, Ed Friedland's like a badass player. What do you think you'd done, like, taking that one concept and just thought, "Yeah, that's the thing. I'll teach them this.
I am perfectly, this is no indictment on Ed Friedland's book. I just think that he starts with that. I think it, or whatever. Maybe I just grabbed onto that of like, oh yeah, this is the way. But I feel like I went through that book and I'm like, oh, all right, here we go. We're starting with the chromatic approach. And I was like, oh, here's how you got to start it. And boy, if I could have it to do all over again, oh, I would have started with chord tones. Pete Shue, man, he beat me up. He was like, no. And so that was a real lesson for me of like, if you are playing a blues or jazz music, starting out with 1-3-5 of every chord, if you can walk through Autumn Leaves, or if you can walk through Take the A Train, whatever it is with, and I know I'm talking about the real book, I'm talking about jazz right now, but if you can look at a chart that has chord symbols on it and play just for the beginning, the root, the third, and the fifth of each one of those chords, you are on the right track. And you will not believe how much that will help you when you get a chart for the first dance tune that you're going to do, the Van Morrison tune that you're going to do on your wedding gig, or right, or if someone says, "Oh, can you build me a bass line?" Wow, well, you just use a root 3-5 in a different style and vibe and different rhythms for rock and roll or for Motown, but it's not different theory. It's not a different set of rules. It's just the way you apply those rules across genres varies, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's exactly that. I think that, you know, a great way of thinking about it is just, it's like chords on guitar. It's like, there's a C major chord on guitar, right? Ding, you know?
Yeah, right, like, right.
There is, like, you know, the rock guys use it, the reggae guys use it, the jazz guys use it. Everybody's using it. Same deal with the arpeggios, isn't it? I mean, like, the rock guys use it, the jazz guys do
for
it,
sure.
Blues guys, we all use that same stuff, but you've got to know the chord, you've got to know the arpeggio to be able to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What about reading notation?
Dun, oh, boy.
So, first of all, let's go. Well, obviously, we know. I'm just looking at my notes here. What does it mean to read notation? Well, what it means is, you know, the black dots, scary black dots on the page. Yes. That's what reading notation means. And the benefits, before we get into sort of like, how do you have to do it? Maybe like, if we go over some of the benefits of, if you can read notation, what do you think are the primary benefits, Ian, of like being able to read notation?
Oh, it's when I talk to players who are great readers and they tell me about the doors that reading opens, or that the different types of gigs that you're able to say yes to, feel confident about. For instance, talking to John Button, right, who came up, grew up in Alaska. John Button now plays bass in The Who, which is just like not much cooler out there.
Great reader. That, great reader.
You know, it's so cool. Yeah, he took over for Pino in The Who. I mean, just unbelievable. So, but he came up in Alaska working, I think maybe playing upright. And maybe I'm wrong, but then, I believe he also then went to North Texas and studied, and he just started reading. I mean, that was his first teacher showed him, that's the deal. Here's how you start. You read this music. And then he got into all kinds of other things, but then he is able, like when I saw him do that reading challenge on SBL, I felt this pain of regret. Like, oh, it is so cool to see somebody read down with great time, great feel, great taste, tone, and read something so beautifully and then be able to improvise in the improvised moments. I mean, that reading challenge you did, it was really, really cool. And so I'll say this, what benefits? It just lets you do more in the language of music. It lets you have more opportunities. If you want to play film score dates in Los Angeles, get into that scene. If you want to play any kind of show, whether that's Cirque du Soleil or a small production in your small town, right? That's all going to be notation. Yeah. If you want to, go through the Omnibook and check out what Charlie Parker played on his saxophone, that's all, of course, transcribed in notation. It just gives you more of the language and more opportunity. And think about it this way. If you don't read, I mean, if you grow up speaking the language, your given language, like Scott and you and I speak English, different variety of English.
That's a
bad, right? But like, if you grow up speaking that, you wouldn't ever have to learn how to read and write the language, but imagine all of the things you would miss out on and where you would be if you never learned how to read. I mean, you could still speak and still communicate, but if you didn't read, it's going to take away some options from you, right?
I think it's I definitely think part of it's definitely opportunities, isn't it? You're going to have more opportunities available to you. Definitely film stuff, definitely theater stuff for sure. Yeah. I'm trying to think of like stuff that I've done that's specific to reading. Not so much I've not done a bunch of reading in the studio, to be honest, but like I know other people that have. So John Button, for instance, I know that he's done a bunch of reading in the studio, especially like film. Yeah. Sort of like when you're, it definitely opens up a lot of opportunities, that you're not going to have if you're not a reader. From those opportunities, you might meet other people and end up on a non-reading gig. So I think it's just worth pointing out that it's not a linear progression, right? It's if you can read well, it might just put you on a gig and you'll meet somebody and you're going to be like, oh, they're going to be like, oh, we're going on tour. Are we going on tour? It's not a reading gig, but you've met that individual that's then going to give you a leg up to another, another kind of sort of like another adventure in terms of like your professional career or whatever. So I think the opportunities, it's definitely going to widen that. Also for me, interestingly, I think that it gives you a different appreciation of rhythm.
It sounds weird
to say this, but sometimes, especially when I'm looking at the James Jameson, do you know, Standing in the Shadows of Motown, that book?
Yeah, of course.
It is really interesting looking at the rhythms and how he approached rhythms, and I'm not really talking about placement. I'm just talking about the actual rhythms that he played were actually quite unique. I think that as bass players, we sometimes get used to playing the same rhythms. You know, when we're playing, we just play the same stuff. And when you look at a piece of music, for me at least, it's like, oh yeah, like I wouldn't have played that rhythm like that, but yeah, maybe I can do that. And I think that it definitely strengthened my understanding of rhythm from a visual perspective and how it sits within a bar or a measure, which is something that it's not obvious, but it was like a little nuanced thing. But in terms of, I guess that, whether do you have to read? Do you have to read? I guess that the answer, it's a little, I used to think that you did. And I'll tell my own story about this. I used to always think that you had to read. I thought that it was just part of being a musician. Like, you are
critical.
There's something wrong with you. If you cannot read, if you're a professional musician and you can't read well, shame on you. Shame. You should be.
Yes,
don't tell anybody about it. Hide that way. Yeah. Yes, if anybody asks, you're just, of course, oh, yeah, I can read, right? So that's what I actually used to believe.
Yeah.
And a lot of younger, and I think it's maybe because maybe that exists out there culturally in musicians, but also because of my personal, I started playing classical guitar. It's all reading, right? So it's kind of like the initial thing I began doing was reading. So it was kind of baked in that, oh, you've got to read.
Yes.
And honestly, I never really enjoyed it, especially when I got into playing bass. I really didn't enjoy it. And it's not like I didn't, I wasn't drawn to it. I wasn't like, oh man, I can't wait to sit down.
Crack open that
and
book.
Just sort of like, crack open that omnibook and start reading Charlie Parker heads.
Yeah.
Like, it just wasn't that. It was like, for me, it was more about transcribing, learning the language and learning to play like Jaco and all of that kind of thing. Right. So for me, I definitely drifted. I've had an interesting journey, I guess, with reading.
Mm-hmm.
And all that to say that I was studying with Gary Willis and, you know, and definitely had guilt because I wouldn't consider myself a great reader.
Yeah.
Even though I've done reading gigs, like I've done theater gigs I've done a bunch of reading gigs. So my reading has, I will say my reading's fluctuated. At points, it's actually been really good. At points, I've been like, And I've actually knocked back a gig before in the past. It was a really great gig. It was in the West End. They're like, hey, do you want to, which is our version of Broadway. It was like a debt somebody. And they're like, called me like, oh, do you want to do this gig? They were like, oh, it's an amazing bass chart, meaning that it's really busy.
There's a lot of black dots on that chart.
Oh, it's an amazing bass part. I was like, no, man. I was like, I'm all good. I said, can I get back to you? And I put the phone down. I actually thought about it. I was like, because I had sort of like an interesting relationship with reading. I'd been, you know, good enough to do gigs in the past, reading, sight reading, all of that. But at this point, I just hadn't done a reading gig in like 2 years.
Right.
And the guy was like, oh, it's tomorrow or it's in like 2 days.
Yeah.
And I was like, could I get the pad beforehand? And he was like,
I could try and send. Wow.
Yeah. It was like, I'm going to have to turn up and do it. So I was like, so I called back. I was like, I'm busy, man. And I still think I made the right decision because I could have slaughtered that gig. It could have been like the train wreck. But I was actually in my early 20s, I was studying with Gary Willis and I was sat in his house, in his studio. And I had all of that kind of sort of like, you know, guilty bagging about not being an amazing sight reader. And I was talking about sight reading and he was like, oh, it's like, I don't really read. I was like, what? And he was like, no, man. He was like, never really interested me. I was like, what? And it was this sort of like, I'm sure he reads a bit. Like, I'm sure he's never sat down and practiced reading. He doesn't think of himself as a reading musician. He feels his strengths is like improvisation, right?
Yes.
So it kind of just changed my life in like one statement. I was like,
like,
and the guilt just went through. Literally threw the guilt off. I was like, oh, I'm fine. Oh. Gary's not obsessed and feeling shame about not being sort of like an amazing sight reader. Now I'm cool. It kind of gave me the freedom to feel different about it, you know. So all that to say that I feel that there are real benefits from reading notation, obviously opportunities and all of the other things covered, but I don't think that I don't think it's an absolute necessity.
Sure.
I think that you can get by without it. You know, Palladino doesn't read music. I mean, there's all of these amazing musicians that read music.
Yes.
But it depends. It comes probably down to what are your personal goals with music. If you are in music school and you want to be a professional musician, I would say being a sort of like, I'm a pretty crummy reader. I can do it on a gig. I mean, I can sight read and stuff like that, but I'm definitely not sort of like I'm not going to go and do a West End gig tomorrow, right?
Right.
With no prep. Being sort of like a pretty crummy reader, I would say it is, if you want to be a pro musician, I would say it's definitely something that you'd want in your tool bag if you can have it, even though Pino hasn't got it. I was like, right. You know, I'm sure, Ian, if you could rewind time and say to yourself, hey, do 5 or 10 minutes practice on reading every day for like a year or so. I mean, would you have done it if you could rewind time?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because I made the claim just a few moments ago and, you know, compared it to a language, to a spoken language. And I don't know that it necessarily is because we don't need music in our everyday to get by in the way that we need
notation,
a spoken
too much to communicate.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I wonder, I mean, if I had it to do all over again, would I have spent more time on reading? I actually don't know. I don't feel a regret about it because like Gary Willis or maybe like a Pino, not comparing myself. I'm just saying there are lanes, right? And when you find yourself in a certain lane that makes you happy, You then, you know, I don't know that I want to actually go do a Broadway show. It's not my lane. It's not where I am. I've never had the hunger for playing in that kind of situation, potentially because I don't have the skill set to play in that situation. But I am far more excited and better at coming up with something for somebody's album or thinking about a sound, thinking about a part, thinking about what I can do to fit into the context of this band. And also transcribing. I love listening to a classic Jamerson line, a classic Pino line, and pulling it out and then applying it to what I'm doing. And I love that stuff so much. So now, that said, do I wish I had better reading facility? Absolutely. Because when I see it, I go, oh, I spent some time too. I got to play, in the section with the Minnesota Orchestra, which is a killing orchestra with this artist named Jeremy Messersmith that I play with. But I was playing electric bass.
Yeah.
In the bass section with all these, you know, with all these upright players. And it was like, you know, a combination of like a pops band and the orchestra. And I just remember looking over at Matt, who is the bass player that I was, you know, and he was maybe in the sixth chair spot, and he was just murdering these beautiful scores. I mean, just like murdering in a good way. I mean, he was playing all this beautiful stuff. And I said, man, talk to me about your journey with reading. And he just like rolled his eyes and said, I just, you know, that's just how I learned.
He said, some people, you know, have just done it forever. Yeah.
That's just how I learned. And then he goes, I was like, oh, but man, you're a bass player in the symphony, man. Like, it's a salary and it's amazing. He's like, it's my cubicle. He's like, it's my cubicle gig, man. He's like, I put on the friggin' tails and I show up and I do this. He's like, you want to know what my real passion is, though? And I'm like, sure. And he pulled out his phone and he opened up his phone and had a picture of a drum kit. And I was like, oh, really?
Drums.
He's like, yeah, man. He's like, I just want to play like Ringo and I just want to play like Tom Petty tunes. And then come to find out that he had a band of all of these orchestra members. It's called the MOB, the Minnesota Orchestra Band, MOB.
Amazing.
And they all would get together and like really do the thing that they wanted to do, which is just play rock and roll by ear.
You know? Amazing. That
and
is
he was
so
like, man,
good.
He's like, I just wish that I could do that, like what you do. And, you know, so the grass is always greener. Matt in the Minnesota Orchestra has his lane and I've got mine, and I don't want to be in his position. That said, for 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day, if I could go back and be way better, have way better facility, it would have saved me some heartache. It would have saved me from a war story I'll tell here in a moment. That's for sure. I think I would do it. But I also agree with you, and I agree with Gary Willis, that it's not absolutely necessary. You should feel no shame. But if it's something inside of you that you think, gosh, like I would like to get a better handle on this, then absolutely do it, because it will only benefit you. It won't detract. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that just to your point, I think it just depends on, what direction you're going in. And if you've got like aspirations of being a pro musician for like 5 or 10 minutes a day or whatever, like, I would probably just sort of like do that, because you never know when the call's going to come. And somebody's going to be like, hey, can you come and do the show in 2 days' time? And you're like, oh, yeah, wicked. Yeah. What is it? Oh, it's like a film. It's a film score. It's like for the new, I can't do it, but do you want to do it? And you're like, hell yeah. And then you get on the film score and you do it. And then like Gary Novak's on drums and you play. Gary's like, great playing, man. Do you want to come down, do some gigs at the Baked Potato?
And, exactly.
And I mean, it just sort of like opens up more.
It has less.
More opportunity. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I think it depends. But if you are not, if you haven't got any aspirations of doing that, I think that, of being a pro musician or semi pro musician, in that you're going to be working like as a pro musician, like jobbing, you know, like you're trying to get the theater gigs, you're trying to get the whatever gigs, you're just doing all of the gigs. If you've got no aspirations of that, I think that, then you probably think you need to look at your time, objectively and think, out of all of the things that I could do, is reading gonna be beneficial for my ultimate goal? So, for instance, if it was like, let's say we've got a 45-year-old dude, his name's Stu, and Stu wants to play with friends and he wants to jam his favorite songs, and he's got like half an hour a day, he plays a little bit, and he's in a situation where he's like, oh, should I be reading music? I'm not sure. I'd be like, Stu, chill, dude. I was like, just like, you know, learn some great bass lines, learn your arpeggios, you know, just like, I mean, like there's better time to spend there's better things to spend your time on than reading. Even though if you had all the time in the world, I might be like, yeah, go for it, dude. Go for it.
Yeah,
but, you know, in alignment with his goals, it's about choosing something that really kind of like meets his needs. And he's going to get him where he wants to go. So, and we had somebody on that new member huddle that was talking about the other day. I can't remember her name, but she was saying, I'm doing my reading. I was like, well, you know, it depends on your goals. Like, you asked her, what do you want to do?
Remember?
Yeah.
And she said, oh, I just kind of want to, I want to play. I want to be able to pick it up and play with some of my friends or my family or something. And we were sort of just like, learn some songs, dive into Player's Path. I mean, and that's something too on SBL, where Player's Path, we make that recommendation a lot because it's actually a combo. You wouldn't have to read it, right? You could hear it and play it, but then you can also read along with the standard notation on the bottom, or I guess it's in tab, but it's in like rhythm standard notation, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I mean, there's tab and there's notation as well.
Yeah. So then you get it all, baby. I just feel like I'm like Mr. Plug today for SBL.
do it.
I just want to make sure everybody knows, like, Scott didn't tell me, like, hey man, make sure you can get a couple of references. But it's funny, man, because when we've been doing these huddles with all these new members, I see directly the benefit of like, where they should start and what's going to get at their goals more. I've been thinking a lot more about that. And Player's Path is so cool.
Isn't it, dude? Yeah. Isn't it? Doesn't it make you feel it when you actually, so just for context, every Monday, Ian and myself, we've been getting on like a live Zoom call with all of the new members that have signed up to SBL. So we get on a live call with them and we just have a chat. And they've got like a bunch of questions, and it's made it so much more real for me. I'm like, like these are real people and they need real help and real guidance. And we need to do a great job of giving them the information that they need. And it's just, for me, it's definitely had sort of like it's just been much more real.
Oh, for sure. It's been amazing just to see, where people are at, and then saying, here's some things that we can guide you toward, and really to feel excited about that, that advice is really cool. And I mean, man, like I have dove into Player's Path, and if you don't know, Player's Path is this step-by-step learning, sequence and program on SBL where you start with a really basic song and you go up through these levels based on the grading system that they use for assessing musicianship in the UK, similar to maybe like a martial arts belt style thing where, you know, you pass one, pass two, pass three. But what I discovered in kind of going through that myself, so just that I would have an understanding of it, if I'm going to talk about it, I want to know what it is. I was like, wow, I'm actually working on my reading. And I didn't even know. Like, I was playing these songs and looking at it. And then I found myself anticipating bars and diving back into a little bit of reading practice. And I thought, if the notation weren't here, I would just be doing, I would maybe chart it out, or I would just learn it by ear, which I do almost everything. But the fact that there are all those options and the notation was in front of me, I was using it and it was so cool. I was like, oh man. So, I mean, I'm pretty into it, dude. I think it's a really like rounded program, actually.
Oh, dude, it was a beast to put together. I cannot tell
you. I'm sure, dude. I'm sure.
It was just like all of the song, like the 70 songs, I think, in it. So of like 70 songs that were all custom. They were like, you know, written for the actual curriculum. 70 songs, they all instruments and stuff like that. Shout out to Cy King, who wrote all of those pieces. And then, more than 70 videos, because there's like, with each song, there's like three videos. So
tutorials.
It's obviously like, like 210 videos around that, like 210 lessons. And then, you know what we've been doing recently, actually? We've been trying to, you have heard of this going on, actually. You know that we've been talking about the overall structure of the, I guess, sort of high level structure of what we're building out in terms of lessons and learning pathways and stuff in SPL. Mm. Dude, it's so complex. It's actually, it is like every time you think you've solved sort of like something, it's like another. You're like, but we've not thought about this thing. And I'm like, oh, so like Ian, Eric, who heads up education at SPL, Eric, and then Phil, obviously shout out to Phil as well, Ops Director at SPL. We just spent like an hour kind of both, all of us just staring at this diagram, trying to figure out what the player's path, 9 levels, obviously, but how do we integrate as we build all of these learning pathways out? How do we actually integrate it all? So it really, from a student's perspective, feels really simple. So there's no confusion. You know, it's really easy for them to move through from level to level to level. And then all of the artist courses that we've got, how do we integrate them as well? So it makes sense and doesn't overwhelm people. And
you've said this before. You've said this before, that it's really easy to make something complex. It's so simple to make it complex, but it's actually really difficult to make something simple. Right.
It and is
so,
really, yeah. And,
yeah. So complexity at SPL,
is. Yeah, complexity is easy. Simplicity is hard.
Yeah, for sure. That's a better way to say it. You guys are going through all of these complex things and trying to simplify them for the user, which is noble work, man. I mean, well, it's getting better. I mean, I already see it. I already see it in hearing people talk about it. Like, oh, I just started Player's Path and already, you know, I'm at level 3 and I feel like I can play songs now and I can actually play the bass. I mean, that is massive. That's massive versus like, what do I do? Where do I go? What YouTube video should I watch? What, you know, I mean, we talk about this all the time, but just to see it in action has been pretty powerful for me. And lo and behold, when I dive in, I find that I get a challenge out of the most basic levels because I have gaps. My reading sucks. So when I started on level 1, I'm like, oh, I can do this. I can read this. And it gave me the confidence, actually, then to move into more difficult material. And boy, you know, so I always, you hear me do it, but just for anybody listening, I always say, if you're starting out with a program, and even if don't let your ego get in the way of doing something at a very foundational or fundamental level. Like, start simple so that you feel like you can assess the situation and the information, get a win, continue to move forward. Don't jump in at, you know, level intermediate, level 4 or 5 when it feels like, I should know how to do this. And then you can't kind of do it and you sort of suck and you're trying to hide suck. Oh God, that is the worst. Start from ground zero and just work up. And I feel like, it starts to fill in. It's just like that beautiful, you know, that it's like all your gaps and cracks in your foundation just get filled. And it's so lovely.
And just talking about taking it from ground zero as well, if anybody's wondering, like, how do you actually start reading, like, notation, just what you're saying, just write from the ground up, you know, just like start really, really simple. Actually, if you are a member of SPL and you're listening, we've got sight reading courses. We've got like 3 or 4 that Phil Mann has put together for us in the and the course library. So definitely check them out. But if you're not a member, well, shame on you, but no, I'm only kidding. But if you're not a member, get a reading book if you don't want to, you know, use SBL, and just start really, really simple. And just as I was saying to Ian before, like 10 or 15 minutes a day, you know, just, it's actually not hard. It's not, it's one of these things that it's just a process. It's like walking,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Walking is not hard. Right. It's like a process. Reading, you know, reading sort of like, you know, at whatever language you speak, reading the actual words isn't hard. It's just a process of learning. So it's, reading music is exactly the same. So just,
so
you know,
true.
Start from the ground up and just take your time with it. But before we close this up, have you got any war stories, Ian? Come on. Give us a war story.
Well, I was going to say, I wish I'd had Phil Mann's sight reading course before I entered this story I'm about to tell, or Player's Path. But I mean, again, that same job that I referenced before, when I got hired at North Central University in Minneapolis to be the bass guy. Oh man, I got asked to come into the studio. They had a little studio on site that they actually did a ton of work out of. And I went in, and there was a good high school jazz band that came in. And I've alluded to this story before and maybe told an abbreviated version. But I mean,
oh,
this was,
yeah. I love this.
This was so intense. So I go in, I'm the 26-year-old bass teacher. I'm the young new guy. You know, oh, he plays rock and roll, but he knows his, you know, knows his modes and arpeggios too. Wow, look at this guy. And you know, I'm like, yeah, I can do it all, you know. And I'm really, you know, and I'm like really leaning in, like, oh, I'm every bass player, I can do all the things. And
dude,
and
have you got
so
a six string
into...
as well? Have you got a six string at
oh,
the time?
Yeah. I mean, I think at that, I mean, I still had it. I think actually though, for this session, I knew it was going to be a jazz thing. So I brought something with flats. I think I was playing a Lakeland, some kind of Lakeland.
I would have loved
time,
it if you
actually.
Just had the six string and just, you got out and started tapping.
Oh, I do have a terrible tapping story for a different episode, man. But yeah, so I go in and it is all of these kids. I mean, you know, they're all teenagers because they're in high school, and they put this chart in front of me. And at that point, I felt solid about walking through a chart. You know, you see a real book chart with a chord tone above it and the slashes. I felt
fairly
competent walking through that. And I knew the studio engineer, Wayne, the best, and we're hanging out. And I'm in the control room, and the band and the director are in the live room. And then I see at the top of the, you know, so I see all these chord symbols with the slashes. I'm like, okay, I feel pretty good about walking. This is going to be fun and fine. And I can't wait. Oh, and I'm going to, it's my first session at the school, at my new job. And then I looked to the top, I scanned to the top of the page, and there were two bar lines. So 8 measures of a crazy hieroglyphic language of dots and stat and ledger lines and things that I really didn't have a good handle on. And I was like, oh, that thing looks crazy. Thank God I don't have to play that. And you know, we get all tuned up, and the director's like, okay, Ian, you ready? I'm like, yep, all good to go. All right. And he's like, okay, here we go, everybody. 1, 2, 1. And that band, this killing high school jazz band, is like, and then I started walking, and he goes, hold on, oh, and he calls it dead, and he goes, hold on, and he looks at me, he goes, Ian, and I said, and he goes, that's a unison line. I said, what? And he said, that's a unison line. And I said, oh. And he goes, ready? And I said, yeah. And he goes, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, and counts it off again. And I played like the first 2 notes. But I mean, it was you know, and that hot, horrible feeling just starts to rise in me. And then those kids
the
playing
sweat.
Sax, dude, they're playing sax like, and they're side eyeing me, realizing. And it starts to set in. All of the 17-year-olds now know fraud. And he stops it again, and he goes, okay. And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, let's try it again. And third time they start it, and I get a few notes in, and he stops it, and all of these kids are just looking at me. And he said, what's going on? And I said, I think I said something like, actually, guys, I don't know how to read. I mean, something, I think actually that's what I, you know, like was in my mind, like, I never learned to read, you know, but in, I think I said like, hey, you know what, let me just have a moment on this. And he said, okay. Yeah. And then I, you know, took it and I'm kind of trying to learn it. And the kid,
yeah.
You know, oh, and I think what I ended up doing is I said, you know what? I don't have a sight reading capacity to pull this off with you guys. That's going to sound good at the moment. I will learn the line and I could maybe overdub it. But what do you say? You play that. And then I will walk with you through the form of the tune. And then I'll go back and take that over as like an overdub. And he said, okay. And that's what we ended up doing. And all that entire, I mean, just, it was anathema to this band director to see like, oh, there's a college bass professor that can't sight read this intense thing. And I mean, oh, dude, I left that session just head in hands, just thinking, oh, what am I doing? And I mean, dude, I wish that I could tell you. And from that day forward, I worked on my sight reading 10 minutes a day for years. And then I came back and I have a story of victory. But sadly, what it did is it shoehorned me further into my weird effect and, you know, like rock, pop, hip hop space. So, yeah, man, I mean, what I ended up deciding as a result of that experience, maybe similarly to your West End story of like, if someone asked me to do something that is just absolutely out of my skill set, especially in terms of reading, I just decline it. And I say, look, I think, let me pass you along to these, you know, other people that would probably do a better job in a reading environment. Like, know thyself. Work your ass off, but also know thyself.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a killing story, mate. Yeah. I just what feel do you it got? Like... Stop. Ian? Yeah. Is there a problem?
Oh, God. I mean, just the deafening silence and those beady eyes of those... of those 17-year-old just monster little jazz bros in the making.
Yeah. Like, I've had that exact situation. Not like that, but just to, I've got a couple that I will speak about. This one, I just wanted to interject because it's actually the same. It's the same thing, but thankfully, you know, in front of a class full of kids. I was on... Is it? Let me just check this. I think it was. Do you know who Marissa Turner is?
I don't.
Yeah. So she. Oh, like she's. Singer? She, she's from Detroit. So she did sort of like. Okay. But she's a badass. I think she did some stuff with Prince as well. Anyway, oh, so I'm wow, like, cool. She came over to the UK, and I'm doing this Marissa Turner gig, and it was like. A lot of it was just, you know, just charts and stuff. You know, it was fine. But there was this one, like, it was around the time of the Jill Scott live, sure. You know, that Jill Scott live CD, right? Yes. Everybody, so it was like, it was fusion-y, you know? It was like when all of that sort of like fusion sort of like thing was being melded with the gospel thing.
Hits and,
all of that, And there was this one. Huge unison line in the middle of this song, and we're doing the sound check rehearsing, and there was this sort of like, it was three bars of just this unison thing, and I was like,
and
I like went into it, and instantly I'm like, you know, a bar in, and the MD's just like, whoa, and all the band stops, and he's like, doesn't look at me, he's like, let's do that again. So like, counts it off, right, we're in. Play it. I'm like, oh, and I've never seen it before, obviously. Stop.
Oh, dude.
Everybody got that? He's not looking at me. He's like, everybody got that? Nobody says anything. He's like, okay, one more time. Counts it off again. Oh, right.
Third time's then, a charm.
Yeah, third time's right. Boom, we go in, right? And I mess it up again. Anyway, stop. And then you're like, turns around.
Yeah,
looks at me. He's like,
the slow turn.
Yeah, he's like, Scott, we got a problem.
Yeah. Oh. Oh. Yes, we do.
I never learned to read.
It was brutal, man. It was brutal. So it was just so similar to your story. One of my war stories. So I actually might have told you this war story before, but it's actually not about reading notation. My first war story was about actually reading charts. Mm-hmm. So I ended up on an audition for a cruise gig, and with this notoriously horrible musical director. And I'd never played any jazz before ever in my life. I didn't know what a walking bass line was. I didn't know what a bossa nova was. And I kind of, so I didn't even know. Did you know, like, I didn't even know I was about to get punched in the face. I was like, I was just like loving life, man. I was like, I'm killing it, dude. I'm like out doing auditions for like cruise gigs.
You can slap a little bit. You can.
Yeah, I've been playing for like, you know, I've been playing for, I think I've been playing for like a year or 18 months or something like.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, so I walked into this rehearsal, got my stuff out, and he like puts these charts in front of me, and he's like, and I can't remember what it was. It was something like, oh, let's be like, there'll never be another you or something. I'm like, and I'm looking at the chart, and it's just chords. Just chords. I'm like,
right.
I'm like, what kind of thing is it? He's like, it's like a swing, right? And I was like, okay. In my mind, I kid you not, this is what I thought. Oh, Jack, that walking bass line thing, that's all chromatic notes. I'll just play chromatic notes. So he counts it off. And in we go. And I just started playing chromatic notes. I didn't know what
like
to do.
Like just up the string, like up. Yeah,
just random. And it's the same thing, right? He's like, whoa.
Yeah.
And he looks at me. Oh, he looks at me, and he's like, he's notorious as well for like. I didn't know this at the time.
Yeah,
there's a story about him actually getting a bass player's bait on a gig. So this guy told me about this story, and he opened the back of the venue and threw the bass into the road. I was like, what? So that's the MD I'm auditioning with, man.
What a dick.
Anyway, so I just like, I just can't get through it. We try. Right. He's like. And he's just getting angrier and angrier. And he's like, right, we'll do a bossa then, right?
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know what a bossa is. I'm like, what's a bossa?
What's that word?
I can't read chord charts. It was just a nightmare. All that to say, anyway, I did speak about it on another episode. I actually did get the gig.
It's so awesome.
I did get the gig, and I went on that cruise ship. It was just one of the most brutal experiences in terms of my ego and self-esteem. My self-esteem was like just lower than a cockroach's stomach that day.
Oh, dude. There is no ego blow worse to a musician than when you're late teens, 20s, and you're pretending you can do everything.
Yeah. And you think you can.
You believe it, right? You're in this, you're in a period of bravado and delusion.
Yeah.
And then somebody peels back the curtain to reveal.
It's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. It's actually a thing. It's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And it's like basically when you're just starting out, within a little time, you just think you're a badass. And then weirdly, as you get more and more advanced with whatever you do, you start feeling worse about yourself. See that there's a massive gap of knowledge from where you are now until it's really interesting.
Yeah, and when you become more of a badass, right, you think you're less of a badass. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Right. And then the other war story is I was on a really big gig on a tour, and it was a Depp gig. And it was, I didn't know it. It was all notation.
Brutal.
And it was kind of just, I just got caught, and I was like, I can remember like turned up on the gig, and I just like opened the pad, and I was like, oh, I kid you not, man. I was like, I looked at my watch. I was like, right, it's 90 minutes. until we go live. And I got a pencil and I went to the toilet and I sat in the toilet, and all of the hard phrases and stuff, I was like,
yeah.
I was like writing the notes above.
Yes.
I was writing the notes.
You just gotta do what you gotta do.
Gotta do what you gotta do. And it was like scribbling them down as fast as I possibly could, you know? And I just,
But that is the thing, right? When you're faced with that thing where, well, I can't just say I'm not going to do it. I mean, when you're playing live, I mean, that's even worse than a studio thing. And in my instance, I got to at least, you know, admit defeat and then go back and bar by bar piece that horrible lick together.
Yeah.
Oh, punch in a bunch of times. But when you're playing live and that stuff's going by, yeah, man, I've definitely done that thing too, where you use a pencil and you hope no one's watching and you know, that ledger line you write C.
Yeah. It's this strange thing, isn't it? Like I would say that I've got this weird relationship with reading, and maybe it's because I was like good when I was a kid. I think that's part of it as well. I was actually a good sight reader on classical guitar. I was quite good. And then I did my first pro gig on bass was reading. Wow. And I did it for like 6 months or 8 months even. So I actually became, through that gig, like a really proficient reader. Here's the weird thing. That story about doing the audition for the ship, that was after I'd been working for like 8 months or maybe more doing a reading gig. But I could read notation at this point really well. On the bass.
But not charts.
No idea about charts. About charts.
Of course. I sometimes lump those two things together, but of course they're not the same. I mean, and I should know better.
They're not the same,
at all.
You get a classical bass player and you're like, oh, yeah, here's like all the things you are, right? Play a walking bass line on that. They are just going to fall to bits. Yeah, they won't know how to do it. Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? They're different skill sets, aren't they?
And then they'll hand over some Wagner to you and you're dead.
Absolutely. All that to say that, reading, it's an interesting sport, but I think that, just to wrap it up, I think that, you know, like reading charts, I think that pretty much everybody should just, you know, do it. Just learn how to do that stuff. Learn how to outline the chords, all of that good stuff. And then when it comes to reading notation, if you have aspirations of working as a musician, like pro style, you know, it's definitely going to, you know, it's a good tool to have in the toolkit if you can. I'd definitely put a few more hours into that in my past.
Me too.
But if you hate it, if you're just like, if you resonate with Gary Willis, who's like, no, man, I don't want to do them gigs. Gary Willis doing a, he never wanted to do a freaking, you know, like a corporate gig or a theater gig. He was just like, get out my face. I want to play ripping improvisational music. And I think it's cool to choose that lane as well. I think it just depends what your own goals are.
Right.
Dude, well should we call it?
Yeah, let's call it.
Dudes, we'll see you next week.
Take it easy. Cheers, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye.